Fourth and final hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase. Darren McFarland, Chase McCabe here in Dallas. One more hour to go, and then we're heading straight to the airport, and we're coming home. We've been here all week. We're ready to get back to Nashville. Willie D left today with the team as they are heading west. They are going out to Los Angeles. The next game will be at the Staples Center Saturday night, Predators and Kings. 9:30 puck drop. I'll have pregame for you starting at 8:30. Every week this time, we bring in Elliot Friedman. We always enjoy our conversations with him. 31 Thoughts, Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada. He does it all. And, of course, every week he's brought to you by Kerry Zier, RE/MAX Elite. Elliot, Happy New Year. How you doing?
Happy New Year's, guys. You have a good time?
We had a blast. But it's an experience we'll never, ever forget. We'll talk about for a long time. But we're also really tired and we're ready to come home. We've been here all week.
I got to tell you, like, your voices sound better than I thought. Like, when I heard you guys have been there down there all week, I thought you'd be coming on. Like, you'd smoked about 48 packs of cigarettes. I got to tell you, you guys sound not bad. Like, you don't have the alcohol throats. And I say that's pretty impressive professional work, I have to say.
Well, hey, thank you.
You Canadians know how to have a good time. I do know that.
Yes, we do, and it looked great. Like, obviously, I wasn't down there. I watched it here from yesterday at home in Toronto, and I mean, the pictures look great. I thought the NBC broadcast did a really good job of showing the atmosphere. The fans look like, I mean, at the end of the day, it's not for the TV audience. It's for the people who go, and it looked to me like the people who went had a great time.
85,630. Is what they announced. It looked fantastic. I will say this. We did get to take it in and experience, because you know how broadcast booths are. Usually they're way up top, and they're usually in some places, in some arenas, they're near the roof. Yeah. And so you're way up. Our broadcast booth was ringside. It was on the glass.
Nice.
So that was really cool.
Yeah, I'm glad they did that because I know – that when we've done them, our play-by-play guys, they're right down by the ice level. So I'm glad you guys got that too. That's pretty awesome.
So we've talked today, Elliot, about Corey Perry is going to meet with the league tomorrow. He's got a hearing, and that means he's going to get suspended. We all saw the elbow of Ryan Ellis less than 3 minutes in. What do you think his fate will be games-wise tomorrow?
Just one thing ruling-wise is that you always read the tweets for the language because there's two kinds of hearings. There's a regular hearing and there's what's called an in-person hearing. And it says that someone's been offered an in-person hearing. For it to be six games or more, it's got to be in person. And the tweet just said hearing. So that says to me it won't be six games, that it'll be maximum five. I think it's going to be pretty significant. I mean, as you guys are aware, Ryan Ellis was involved in an incident in New York with Pavel Buchnevich a couple weeks ago that was somewhat similar, but the league felt very strongly that Buchnevich, his body moved or his head moved right before the contact, and that mitigated what Ellis could do. In this situation, Ellis doesn't move. Perry comes from the blind side. He didn't have to hit him in the head. He got him in the head, and he picked him in the head, and that's a big time no-no. So I think he's going to get a few games. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somewhere between three and five. And I don't think there's any way he's getting away without some kind of a punishment. It was a brutal play, and it didn't need to happen. It's that simple.
Yeah. So what did you make of the game? Obviously, the results were not what the Predators fans were looking for, which were 20,000 strong, by the way, in the Cotton Bowl. Their presence was definitely felt. But, this road trip, they're going to reach the midway point of their regular season on this road trip, Elliot, before they come home to take on the Bruins on Tuesday night. What did you make of the game? And let's talk about, as you can imagine, the chatter is, okay, what does this team need to do? And, we've brought this up to you before, and you've talked about it, but what did you see yesterday?
Well, I think that, I mean, like everybody else, I thought you guys were going to win that game 8-0 in the first 5 minutes. It looked like you guys were going to absolutely blow them out of the building. And, I just think that you had a chance to put your foot on their throats early in that game, and you didn't do it. And I think the most alarming thing to me is just the way that when Dallas really started going, when that ball came rolling down the mountain, there was nothing you guys could do to stop it. And, you know, what did you guys go, like 12 minutes without a shot while they were pouring it on, something like that? Yeah, like, that is extremely concerning. Like, if you talk to guys who've been GMs for a long time, and your GM has been a GM for a long time, one of the things they talk to me about is pushback. When your team is in a game or in a streak where things are going badly, do you push your way out of it? And yesterday, you guys have kind of been weird. You've had weird losses and then good wins. You've been really inconsistent. But yesterday, on a grand stage, to see the lack of pushback in that game against Dallas, that is alarming. That is very alarming, especially a veteran team. And you've got a real veteran team. You know, I think that David Poile's been trying to make moves. We've spoken about Turris. I think he's had Craig Smith out there. I think he's put some guys out there, and there's nothing biting right now. I don't think it's always on the coach, but there's no question you're getting, you know, close to like DEFCON 5 in Nashville. And when Pekka Rinne says at the end of the game, I don't know what's going on, you know, that says to me that it's getting close to the point where the GM is going to have to do something to get the team going.
Well, what do you think the odds are? I mean, you've known David Poile for a long time. You've covered him for a long time. He doesn't fire coaches. He had five in his career, and especially mid-season. And this franchise has only had two in its short history. So do you think that he has a timetable? I know Peter LaViolette was asked yesterday if he's feeling any pressure, and he said he wasn't going to get into that right now. He's been asked that question before. And it said no. So what do you think the pressure is on him right now?
I think it's high. You know, but I don't think, like, again, I don't think it's just on the coach, guys. I think that it's hard not to, like can't be, those guys all have to be looking around the room and saying, you know, they're all pros. Like, they've been around a long time, that group of guys. And they know when you play like this, something's coming. As a matter of fact, that's one of the scariest situations for a team to be in, when you start playing like as if you're waiting for that thing to occur. And that was a little bit about, like to me, that team yesterday, and I mentioned Rene's quote at the end of the game, it's like the Predators are sitting there saying, something's going to happen here to get us going. You know, what's it going to be? I don't think David Poile wants to make a coaching change. I don't think, as you guys mentioned, he doesn't believe in it. The only thing is that I would just say is, and again, I don't know that he's considering it. All of a sudden, there's some really good coaches out there, like Peter DeBoer, who you guys know well. He's out there. I don't know if anybody is going to rush into hiring Mike Babcock quickly, but he's out there. And, you know, there have been some changes this year. We've already had five coaching changes. I mean, John Hines is a guy, your assistant general manager, Jeff Kelty, knows very well. He's out there. And I think the one thing that makes me wonder about it is there are options, and there are sensible options. And I think, you know, I remember going on a road trip once where David, it was years ago when Trotz thought he was in trouble. And David Poile made it very clear that this was not going to be the coaches. This was not going to be on the coach. And maybe at some point David Poile will come out and he'll say that. Again, I'm not convinced he's going to do it. I believe he doesn't want to do it. But at this point in time, it's rare in the middle of the season that the kind of options that are out there are actually out there.
Very interesting stuff. And I could also see maybe, you know, the staff. There could be a change or two on the staff at some point. They did add an assistant in Dan Lambert this year to help with the power play, which has been pretty up and down. But I think the next few weeks could be very, very interesting for the Nashville Predators as they try and turn
this thing
around.
I think that's a tougher one to do in the middle of the year, and I'll say why. Like, unless you're bringing in someone that you have yourself, a lot of teams won't allow guys to move during the year unless it's for a position up. Like, even some teams don't allow their guys to move in the off season unless it's a position up. Like, there was a guy last year in the American League, he's a head coach, and another team wanted to interview him for an assistant coaching job, and the NHL team blocked it. They said, no, unless you want him for a head coaching job, you can't do it. And that goes doubly for in the middle of the season. So I think that's a harder thing to do unless he's somebody already in your organization.
Elliot, what do you think Justin Williams is going to do?
My guess is he comes back and he plays for Carolina. And I think we'll know by the end of the week. You know, I've mentioned actually this a couple of times today. We have a show on Sunday nights here called Hometown Hockey. And it's basically it's an NHL game surrounded by, we go to a community in Canada. And it's like very grassroots. It looks at some of the NHL players who come from that city or past and present, and also looks at some of the people who do a good job of organizing the sport at the grassroots level. And this Sunday night, we're actually in Cobourg, Ontario, which is where Justin Williams is from. And I had forgotten about that when I wrote that this week. And I know some of our guys are hoping that maybe he announces it in conjunction with the game. I don't know if that'll happen. But I think my expectation is he's going to come back and he's going to play for the Hurricanes. But I don't know that. I can't say that for sure.
Let's finish up with the goaltenders. Nashville, our market has been blessed with goaltending play over the years since this franchise has been in Nashville. Rarely have we talked about real woes, when it comes to a netminder. And Saros and Pekka especially, has been here for a long time, and certainly we've been spoiled by his play. But you got two goaltenders that everybody, going into the season, thought maybe it's the best 1-2 punch in the league to have, and yet they're both sub 900 save percentage as we approach the midway point of the season. What do you see? Obviously, when there's struggles in net, you're trying to figure out, is it the goaltender? Is it the play in front? Is it a little bit of both? What do you think?
Well, it's never just one thing. I mean, it usually is a little bit of both. But there's no question, guys, those guys are not at the level that you're used to. They're just not. And it can bring a team down. I hate to say it's an excuse that your goaltending's bad, so your team's not very good. I think that that's too simplistic. I just would say in this particular case, I think it's very fair to point out that, as you guys said, there's high expectations for Rene and Saros, and they're not at them. It's that simple. Now, the interesting thing about all of this is that all of a sudden there's a pretty unique goalie market out there. There's a number of goaltenders who aren't signed to contracts for next year. Some of them are unrestricted, guys like Markstrom in Vancouver, guys like Crawford and Leonard in Chicago, Thomas, and there's also guys who aren't starters but are sort of like 1A guys, like they're good. They're not full-time starters, but they're good goalies, like Khudobin in Dallas, like Greiss in New York with the Islanders. Those guys are not signed for next year. Now, the tough thing is, I don't know if any of those guys would be available now. Vancouver's trying to make the playoffs. The Islanders want to win the Stanley Cup. Dallas wants to win the Stanley Cup. Chicago, they're kind of in a weird spot. I think they're 4 points out, and they're going to go for it. But I don't think anybody sees them as a Stanley Cup contender. So I'm not sure how many of these guys are available now, but I can't imagine that David Poile isn't looking out there and saying, is there some kind of option that we could do that's better than what we have? And I'm sure he's looking at it.
I'll tell you what, because of our setup, obviously we're around all the NBC and NHL network folks. I mean, we had the who's who stop by our desk in our coverage and sit and chat with us, including Gary Bettman and others. But we had a couple interesting conversations along these lines, Elliot, with Kevin Weeks and also Brian Boucher stopped by, because these are two former goalies, and we talked about how the league is kind of going away from that workhorse, the guy that would start 65 games a year, and now it's about really like almost splits. I mean, it doesn't have to necessarily be even, but it's pretty close, and so it seems like everybody's going away from that. And how, I wonder how it seems like everybody's going that direction. You agree?
Yes, and the science backs it up. You know, I mean, we've got a guy here in Toronto, Anderson, who's on pace for something like 65 starts, and the Maple Leafs are really uncomfortable with that. The science says you just don't win the cup doing that.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Where before we didn't even bat an eye.
Did Boucher and Weeks like say they'll come back if Poile paid them $1 million?
Oh, I tried to pin them both about seeing if they would sue. In fact, I tried to pin Weeks against Chris Mason. You know, I was like trying to bring our broadcast crew, and I was like, we'll throw Hal Gill and J.P. Dumont, who just did a game with us here recently. So we tried to. I tried to see if he could give me a winner. He said. He did the politically correct thing. He said, C. Mace is going to beat him. He's like, yeah, I'm not going to win that. So we had a lot of fun with that. But as we do with you every week, Happy New Year. Thanks for doing this as always, and we'll talk to you next Thursday.
My pleasure, guys. I'm glad you guys had a great time. It's awesome. You should get that experience. I'm glad your fans did too. And have a great week. We'll chat next week.
Same to you. Elliot Freeman. Thanks, Elliot. With Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. 31 Thoughts. He does it all. Up there and does a fantastic job, and he joins us every Thursday at 1 o'clock. That's brought to you by Carey Zeyer Remax Elite. We will come back with more of Darren Donick and Chase here from Dallas, but right now I want to talk to you about the folks at USS, United Structural Systems. And a lot of you out there listening to this, you're homeowners. And they are a foundation repair and waterproofing company that has served our area, Middle Tennessee, since 1994. They have over 18,000 satisfied residential customers, over 18,000. Okay, that's a lot of happy homeowners. And this time I want to talk to you about concrete leveling. If you've ever had settling sidewalks or slabs or patios or steps right at your house, which most of you do, is your door or your porch steps tilted? Maybe you've seen that happen. Is your sidewalk or patio shifted? Cracks, remember? We talked earlier about the cracks. If you see that, the house is trying to tell you something. At your house is trying to tell you something. A sidewalk or patio creating a trip hazard or potentially dangerous situation. Look, these are all signs that you may have some leveling issues, and you need to get the experts out there, okay? As they would say at USS, when it comes to concrete leveling, don't replace it, raise it. They can fix it for you. They're all about quality. They're all about their reputation. And they have the expertise to fix your problem at your house. And more importantly, they have integrity. That's important to them. Free estimates, locally owned, licensed and insured, and right here in our area and helping you. So if I have your attention with this, look, they guarantee their best. So go on and give them a call, 615-227-2275. That's 615-227-2275. If any of this stuff is going on at your house, or you can always go to their website, usstn.com. We'll be hitting the door here soon. I know this is the doors, but we'll be hitting the door.
Yes, we will.
I feel better. I'm pumped up now because Elliot, man, I expected you guys to be dragging a lot more than you are. I got a boost just out of that. Good stuff, Elliot Freeman. A lot of you wanted to call in and talk about your experience at the Winter Classic or just talk about this team. We can get back to that because we weren't able to get to everybody. We had to break away and get to Elliot. So if you want to jump back in there and talk about maybe something you heard in that interview or your experience down here in Dallas at the Winter Classic, obviously a lot of you listen to the show. We're in attendance at Dallas. We saw a lot of familiar faces down here. But some of you may be driving back now. 615-737-1025, 737-1025. But call in. We'd love to hear about your experience.
Yeah, we have a text, too, because we had the caller earlier talk about the Midway and the Fairgrounds. And this texter doesn't identify themselves, but they say, the Midway and Fairgrounds were awful at the Winter Classic. No one could get food hardly, and they ran out of water and food in the stadium. Biggest issue was they cut off half the fairgrounds and fences, everything to only go certain ways, and everything got bottlenecked in certain spots where people hit a wall and literally couldn't move. The actual game and experience was great, but the planning was awful. Makes you appreciate how well Nashville pulls off events smoothly and plans well.
Huh. Like I said before, we did not –
Right.
Unfortunately, we didn't get to experience any of that. So it's too bad. It was a cool setup right there in that end zone. I mean, you could see the whole That whole area was hopping. But I hate that it looks like there were a lot of issues, though, too.
Yeah, and look, you're not going to be able to make everyone happy. That's just kind of a part of it sometimes, especially with an event as big as the Winter Classic. But
yeah, but you need to, people need to be able to navigate.
No, I agree. I mean, it's,
and running out of stuff, that's
how many times have we had this conversation about Nissan Stadium, though? You know, of the gates and hard to get in, and the concession stands taking forever, and so I mean, Nashville knows how to pull off events. That's correct, but we do know that there have been problems in the past, especially at Nissan Stadium.
Let's go to Nate. I know Nate was one of those callers. I think he's driving back. We weren't able to get to. Nate, what's up?
Hey, guys. Yeah, around 6 hours, I guess, outside of Nashville and Little Rock. So, got a ways to go.
Yeah, you do. But how was your experience down here?
Oh, me and my now fiance, we loved the Winter Classic. It was a lot of fun. Obviously, the end result was not what we wanted. But other than a couple of fans, everybody was great. I totally empathize with the guy that was talking about the bottlenecking over near the arcade and stuff. It was over near the Stanley Cup and a haunted house and the new Amsterdam, the pink vodka stage area where they were doing some interviews. Yeah, everybody was wanting to go in a different direction. And it was basically I-24 and 40, worse.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was like we were just shuffling our feet trying to get through.
But, well, I was just told that apparently the reason that area got so bottlenecked was that's where the person had the heart attack, and they were blocking it off so an ambulance could get in and get to him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had heard about that, and unfortunately, that individual passed away. But
yeah,
we had a great time. It took us from the beginning of the first intermission to halfway through the second period to get our food because the line was ridiculously long. Like, it was going down the concourse, and then it curved back going towards the concession stand. But, I mean, hey, it's what you get when you go to big events.
Yeah, no doubt. So overall, you give it 2 thumbs up.
I do, and I will be honest, I think the most exciting part was when everybody was cheering for the pig races, because that was awesome, that everybody was so into that.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a chance to see the pig races, them practicing that the day before when we were broadcasting there, so we knew that was going to be a hit for sure. Of course, we didn't know about all the special names the pigs had, but they were doing a lot of the practicing when we were there on Tuesday broadcasting, so we knew that the fans were going to love the little pig races.
But I could definitely side with Pete Weber, because I kind of actually thought about that. I was like, you know what? The Roman Yossi pig, he won the first heat. And I was like, oh, no. Does that mean he's going to win the whole thing and we're going to actually lose the game?
Roham Yossi?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good, Nate. Safe travels back, and I'm glad your all's experience for the most part was really, really good.
So yeah, thank y'all. In. Y'all safe travels, too.
Thanks.
Thanks, Nate. Interesting stuff.
By the way, that does make sense now. I don't know if that information from that text is true or not, but, I mean, that does make sense.
Yeah, and they say it still wasn't great, you know, being able to navigate everything, but that would obviously change things when somebody had a medical issue, so...
Browns owner Jimmy Haslam has said that they will hire the head coach first.
Mm-hmm.
Then the head coach will collaborate on the GM search.
That doesn't make sense. It's backwards.
What?
You hire the GM.
You hire the coach to then figure out who the coach wants as his GM?
That's...
What?
He's going to hire. Look.
Oh, boy.
You laugh at me, but this. If I'm Jeff Fisher, I'm I'm on the first plane to Cleveland. You go into that interview like, hey, let me tell you how this is, how we should do this.
By the way, Ron Rivera was just sworn in today as the new Washington Redskins coach.
Did you see who they hired as the DC?
I did not.
Jack Del Rio.
Really? Mm-hmm. So he is back in, huh?
Yep. So I saw that last night, I guess it was.
Interesting. They're going to need all the help they need in Washington, or they can get. All right, we'll come back. More coverage here from Dallas as we were getting close to wrapping our coverage up here down in Big D. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5, The Game. Rams COO Kevin Dimoff has announced in a statement that the team will unveil new uniforms, helmets, colors, and logos in the coming months.
Yep. Makes sense to open the stadium.
Are they going to go? Do we think they're going away from the iconic Rams helmet look?
I don't know. That's interesting.
Are they going to change? They're going to change it all up?
I thought they were going to go back to the old look of the blue and the yellow, like they wear predominantly at home. And then, but I've also, on the road, the helmet stickers are different. They have the white Rams, like, which is the old school. So I don't know. I don't know if they're going to have a completely different look or, I guess trying to be the new LA Rams and not as much the old ones, but it'll be interesting to see as they get ready to open their new stadium next year and having a new look. It's kind of crazy to think that Vegas and Los Angeles open in the same year.
Yep.
Those stadiums.
I know. Pretty crazy. There'll be some new fancy places. There'll be some new Super Bowl stops.
Yep.
Guarantee that.
Yep.
No doubt about it. I just lost my train of thought.
We're almost there. We're almost there.
See, now we got all excited. Elliot propped us up, and now we just crashed and burned. I totally lost my train of thought. I had something really good, a really good nugget that's gone. Tennessee and Indiana, by the way, will be playing down in Jacksonville tonight at 6 o'clock. Boston College and Cincinnati, that's the only two bowl games today. They're going to kick off in about 25 minutes. BC and Cincinnati. I suspect Cincinnati will destroy Boston College.
Yeah, I feel pretty confident in that. I was reading, we were talking about the playoffs earlier. Greg Rosenthal of NFL.com put his predictions up for Wild Card Weekend. He has the Titans winning 30-27.
Really?
Over the Patriots. He has the Texans beating the Bills 28-24. He has the Saints beating the Vikings 36-27, and the Seahawks defeating the Eagles 23-21 in a tight game. So
interesting.
I thought that was a neat little nugget.
Yeah. By the way, we were talking yesterday about the house band.
Yeah.
We weren't sure if that was really Kansas because we couldn't see at the time or if it was a house band. It was a house band.
They were really pretty good.
Yeah, it was a pretty good house band.
Yeah, they were warming up.
We feel like we can comment on that because, there's good house bands in Bridgestone Arena.
Yeah.
Really good house band, and they have bands on the stage all the time that are really good. I mean, we get great music, obviously.
Six Wire.
In Nashville. Yeah. Love them. But rarely, but we go on the road a lot, and just like, the house bands are like, oh, yeah, sounds like karaoke night. Not very good.
Well, or they don't have a house band. I mean, but most places don't.
They were legit. That one yesterday at the Winter Classic, they were legit.
Yeah, it was good. The NHL did a good job with that part of it and putting on the stuff outside of the game. So, and you were just playing a video that I think you tweeted out yesterday of the Preds fans giving it to Ben Bishop.
Yeah, after the goal, and
so cool to hear.
I know, and that thing has like 8,000 views.
Yeah, so. People brought the passion, as Terry Crisp would say, and it was it was good to see Crispy and Brent Peterson and
yep.
Jerry Helper, and everybody was here. So we had a good time.
Everybody did indeed make the trip. We're going to hear a conversation we had with John Miller. John Miller is the guy who's – you're going to hear the story. He's behind the Winter Classic. And it was pretty fascinating. Obviously, he is entrenched in NBC Sports. He is way up in NBC. He is, I think, officially the president on the sports side of things.
Yeah.
For NBC. Really nice guy. Got a chance. That's the first time I'd ever met him. Obviously, I was familiar with his name, but that was the first time I'd ever met him. Really nice guy. We had an interesting conversation with him that you're going to want to hear on the other side. He was nice enough to sit down with us before the Winter Classic started yesterday, and we'll just kind of talk about how all that came about, and you'll want to hear that. We'll do that to close out things here in Dallas. We look forward to talking to you tomorrow back home. Hope everybody safe travels back for all the people who have been listening and traveling back. But stay tuned. John Miller, our conversation with him, the head of NBC Sports. We'll find out how he came up with this concept that is the Winter Classic. We do that to close out Thursday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. We had an opportunity to talk to John Miller with NBC Sports. He sat down at our broadcast table here at the Winter Classic in Dallas. Here's that conversation. We're looking forward to this. John Miller has been nice enough of NBC Sports to stop by. He knows a little bit about the Winter Classic. John had his hand in this concept. John, how you doing? Thanks doing this.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And I can't think of a better way to kick off 2020 than the Cotton Bowl in front of 85, 90,000 fans and to watch a good hockey game, hopefully.
Well, for 12 years now, I've known where my New Year's Eve and New Year's Day is going to be. So it's been kind of nice. It's been good. You don't have to plan. But, yeah, no, they've done a tremendous job with this facility. And I have to give props to Steve Mayer from the NHL and his team because they have really made this building sparkle.
Yeah.
It's really impressive.
Let's go back to the beginning. Like, where was this? I'm always wondering, it wasn't in a lab, was it? Where was this hatched?
I would love to tell you that I have that kind of vision. I quite honestly don't. So here's the deal. We had been in the college football bowl business for a long time. And we did the Rose Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl. And then we eventually got out of the bowl business in the late 1990s. We had one bowl, the Gator Bowl, which we eventually walked away from. And so we were looking for programming on New Year's Day. In 2004, we had made a deal with the NHL to become their new broadcast partner. And so we were looking for ways to kind of kick off the relationship. And in October of 2004, the Boston Red Sox had been down 3-0 to the Yankees in the baseball LCS, came back and won it 4-3. Devastated Yankee fans, Red Sox fans celebrated the whole deal. And I thought, what would be more fun than maybe having the Bruins come play the Rangers and have them play in Yankee Stadium on New Year's Day, a great way to celebrate our new NHL relationship. So like most things, you take the idea to a couple of folks. My boss was a guy named Dick Ebersol, who's really a genius in the sports business. And he got it and he embraced it. And then we went and talked to the NHL. And interestingly enough, Gary Bettman, who's the commissioner, was interested but was a little bit nervous because they don't have a special events group at the NHL. So that would have been a problem for them. But we canvassed.
I think they're trying to see how loud they can get the music.
Right, I think I was
going to
say.
How loud will it go? Will it go to 11? Will it go to 12?
They're going to see how you adjust to distractions, John.
Yeah. So I'm somewhat used to it. So we went to the Bruins. The Bruins were interested and were open to a lot of things. We went to the Rangers, and the Rangers had an issue because they couldn't play games outside of Madison Square Garden because of their lease deal with the city of New York. But they were willing to explore, you know, opportunities. And then I went up to see the folks at Yankee Stadium to see what they thought, and they basically laughed me out of their office and said, Yankee Stadium is the house that Ruth built. We're never going to play anything but baseball here. And then shortly after that, we had a lockout, and so everything got put on the back burner. But I continued to be somewhat of a nudge, and I kept pushing people that this was how we really wanted to start our hockey thing. And in late 2006, a guy named John Collins came on board at the NHL, who's a really sharp marketing guy who I had worked with when he was at the NFL. And I told him, you know, the concept. And he said, well, let me see what we can do. And he came back and saw me in the spring of 07 and said, well, only one NHL team has agreed to explore hosting it, and that's the Buffalo Sabres. And I said, sold. We'll have Pittsburgh come up and play. There were, you know, Sidney Crosby was coming into the league. We thought it would be a great opportunity for us to showcase them. And so we played the first game on January 1st, 2008, up at Rich Stadium in Buffalo. And I remember pulling into the parking lot, and it reminded me of the AFC Championship game from 1991. It was packed, and people were tailgating and grilling outside and throwing a football and doing all kinds of stuff. And I said, wow, they got a lot of people. They sold out that first game in about an hour.
Wow.
And so they had 75,000 people in Buffalo. We had a great game. It went to a shootout. Sidney Crosby scored the winning goal. Unfortunately, the home team couldn't deliver a victory for all those fans, but it snowed. And the next thing you know, they're saying, well, what are we going to do it next year? And to be honest with you, we had thought it was a one and done. We thought maybe we would get 1 year out of it and we'd find something else for New Year's Day. And now it's become a tradition. I believe I heard last night they've done 26 outdoor games, yep, including the Stadium Series games, including the Heritage Classic up in Canada. And it's a lot of fun. And the people who come have a great time. The teams really enjoy it. I watched a bunch of the stars out here when I first got here, just walking around and staring up at the crowd and the stadium and stuff like that. And you can tell that they're excited about being here, too.
Willie and I have been fortunate enough to be in this for a long time. So we've done some really cool things over the years, and some things that we were part of on the ground floor where it was a brand new concept. And it's really neat when you go into that, because there's a lot of nervous and excitement, but this energy around it. But also, John, you don't know how it's going to be. So leading up to, you know, you said it was success, you know, you come out like, wow, all this stuff. But leading up to that, how nerve-wracking was it? Like, is this going to be a big deal? Is this going to be a flop? That's the part that is always, and you're in the unknown, right? You've never done this before. Where is there going to be hiccups and things going to go wrong? How are we going to handle that? What was that like?
At 10:30 in the morning when we pulled up to the stadium, it started raining.
Oh.
And we knew that if we had gotten washed out and rained out, that would have been it.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough support among other owners and the league, and they didn't have a special events group that really would have propelled it to the next level. So we did have all those fears. And today is a perfect day for the Winter Classic. You've got cloud cover. It's going to be in the high 40s, low 50s, so you don't have any, you know, real issues there. But, yeah, you have all those things that you worry about. And you worry about whether or not the fans will embrace it. You know, a lot of people told me nobody's coming out on New Year's Day to watch a hockey game. And I said, you don't know hockey fans. Hockey fans will show up and follow their teams because they love the sport. And want to be part of this.
John Miller is with us from NBC Sports. You're right, John, just in the airports coming through. We both went through two different airports, two different days. The jerseys that you saw, it was really, I mean, if you were walking through and you were not aware at all about hockey, you could not help but notice the jerseys from both teams. So I want to ask you about just the audience since NBC has taken over, how it's evolved. You know, we go to the NHL broadcasters meetings. They always have a report. It's fascinating, the demographics of the people who watch the game, the youth of the stars in this game, not the Dallas Stars, but the youth across the league.
Sure.
It's really remarkable. So from NBC's perspective, how pleased are you with the relationship?
We love the property. We've been doing the NHL since 2006 and grew it in 2011 and combined it with our sports network, NBCSN, so we have all of National Hockey broadcast. We have a great production team led by Sam Flood, who's our executive producer and is a hockey junkie. John McGinnis, who's our coordinating producer. Our talent team led by Doc Emmerich and Eddie Olchuk, and the studio with you know, Mike Milbury. Mike Tirico is here to kind of send the message that this is a big event. So we really put a lot into it, and it's paid off because we've seen the response not only in ratings and engagement, but the way sponsors treat it, the way everybody in the community recognizes how we treat the sport and how we super serve the fans. And I think fans know when they watch a hockey game on NBC, our announcers are going to be really well prepared. We're going to treat the game the right way, and it's going to be a great experience.
You know, in this one, I would imagine you've gone to all these this is unique, right? That's never been, of course, Dallas, right? That's the first thing everybody's, they're doing it in Dallas this year. And obviously when we start, you're going to see why it's in Dallas. But this will be very unique compared to some other sites that have been, right?
Yeah, they're going to have 84,000 people here. They sold out in 45 minutes here. You know, it's the second largest crowd ever to see a hockey game after the Big House in Michigan when Detroit hosted Toronto a few years ago. And I think it's going to be great. It's going to be, you know, this stadium is a really, it was built in 1930. And the way it's constructed, it's really loud.
Yeah.
And I think people are going to be amazed at how loud and how close the fans are to, yeah,
the
action.
Upper deck really looks like you have a great view of the upper deck at this place.
You can. The sight lines are great. And I'm excited to see what we get.
You know, I know this is radio, John, but you still could have done a slide in to start this interview. You know, you could have done that.
Not me. If you saw me slide, you wouldn't you wouldn't want to see that.
In all seriousness, are you amazed like that, how that just kind of took off, Chris Collinsworth? Just something
that
simple?
Yeah, it's amazing what social media can do for you. And, you know, people now tune in to look for it.
Right.
So it's that's kind of fun.
I'm surprised there's not odds on, you know, different things that can happen on the slide.
All right,
let's finish up with this. Everything is always changing and evolving. And so as this thing has become a staple with the National Hockey League and NBC Sports and New Year's Day, do you look down the road? Is there, what are the discussions for down the road? Is there anything?
Well, I think there are other cities that are very viable to host it. I mean, I think your city, Nashville, did a great job with the All-Star Game. We were recently there for the NASCAR Awards, and they were terrific. And I certainly think it's the kind of place that could host a Winter Classic. There are a lot of venues, and I wouldn't mind going back to some of the older ones. I think Buffalo is ready to host again. You know, Wrigley Field and Fenway were great venues. So I think there's all of those opportunities. So the nice thing about dealing with the NHL and Steve Mayer and Gary Bettman and their special events group is that they're already thinking about next year, which is great.
Yeah. Good to see you. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, John Miller, NBC Sports. Really appreciate him stopping by.
Good stuff from John Miller, NBC Sports. That is going to do it for our coverage here in Dallas. We're excited. We had a blast here, but we're ready to get home. We're ready to go back to Nashville. We're going to do that. We'll talk to you tomorrow to wrap up the week. Happy New Year to everybody. Have a great rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Jared and the GM, that's next. Closing time.